Once again, we would like to thank Jake and Karen Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn in memory of Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov. Then Neshamos should continue to have an Aliyah. All right, so we're going to jump in. Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav is what we are up to. And it's one of, I'm not sure I'm allowed to have favorites, it's like kids, but this is one of my favorite Mishnayos out there. And we're going to do a little bit of a different structure than we usually do. So far, we've been going to the historical background first, and then going to some more of the classical commentators. We're going to flip it, and we're going to do sort of the classical style first, and then next week, we're probably going to combine this Mishnah and the next Mishnah in the historical context. So let's jump right in. Yoshua ben Prachi, source number one. You should have two source sheets. One is a double-sided photocopy, and one is a Word document double-sided. Source number one in the Word document double-sided, Mishnah Meseches Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, Yeshua ben Prachya, Benitai Ha'arbeli Kiblu Mehem. So these two, the next set of Zugos of our pairs, accepted, received the Torah from the previous two. Yeshua ben Prachya used to say the following, Aselecha Rav, so number one is you should make yourself you should make yourself a rabbi. Does that mean that you should become a rabbi, or you should get a rabbi somehow? Uknei lecha chaver, you should acquire, buy yourself a friend. And then finally, Bebe Danis, kol ha'adam lekaf sechus, you should judge all people to the scale of merit favorably. Okay, so in terms of, let's go each one of these, 1, 2, 3, Uknei lecha, Aselecha Rav. So what do we have to say about that? So if you go to the outline, the second side of that page. Again, this is going to be our main page. Our Word document. You have the one side is a source, the other side is the outline. So we're going to be flipping back and forth between that. So Aselecha Rav, what does that mean? So you should make yourself, or acquire yourself, somehow get a rabbi. So what's the idea here? So the Rambam basically says that we learn better from other people. And I'm actually going to frame this whole Mishnah as a comment on social psychology. This is really, you think you're better off on your own? Well, you're not. Number one is that you think you can learn better on your own? Well, you can't. Get somebody to teach you. The Rambam goes so far to say is that even if that person that you have to make into your rabbi is a lower level than you, so you know more than them, you're a greater tzaddik than them perhaps, you know all of Shas, they don't know that much, still there is a value and a necessity to have somebody who is over you in terms of that teacher-student relationship. So, Aselecha Rav. And then part of this also, and the Meiri brings this out in one of his commentaries, is that you need a role model. You need somebody who you can look up to, who you can aspire up to, somebody who you can look at and say, like, this is who I want to be, this is who I want to try to be like. So everybody needs somebody who we can look up to and say, I want to learn from them, I want to be like them, I want to act like them. That's the essence of Aselecha Rav. Uknei lecha chaver, acquire yourself a friend. So if you flip back to the source side, source number two, Rashi says this can mean one of two things. The obvious one is chaver mamish, which means actually get a friend. But the first one he says, Amri la, source number two, Knei lecha chaver, Amri la sefarim, books, which reminded me of this little thing that was posted in a school that I worked at once. Some of my best friends are books, right? So for those of us who don't like friends so much, at least you have your books. So according to Rashi, that's a fulfillment of Knei lecha chaver. But the more mainstream approach is that this means that we need actual friends. What's the benefits of friends? Obviously, there's we can intuit what friends do, but the Rambam spells it out a little bit for us in source number three. V'amru Knei lecha chaver. Hotziu b'lashon kniya. So there is a discussion about how come for the rub it says asay, and for the friend it says kneya. These are two different forms of getting. One is making, one is acquiring. V'lo amar asay l'chachav. It doesn't say make for yourself a friend. Always chaber l'chaberim, or connect yourself to friends. Kiyotze b'zeh. Why does it say buy yourself a friend? V'hakavana, Shiroi la'adam sheyikne la'atzmo chaver al kol panim. You should acquire for yourself a friend at all costs. Kadeshi is kenubo kol inyano. So you can. How do they translate it here? You should have who will help him better all aspects of his conduct. So through this friend, you are yourself building yourself up. Kimosha amru ichavra imisusa, which is ochavrusa imisusa, which who said that? Anybody know? Who said ochavrusa imisusa?
Patrick Henry.
That is correct. No, that was recited by. I'm blanking on his name. The one with the trees, went to sleep for 70 years. Rip Van Winkle. Yes. Choni Hamagel, thank you very much. Choni Hamagel, there's a story in the Gemara we'll get to perhaps in the future, who went to sleep for 70 years. There's this whole nice message involved in the story, and then he wakes up and nobody recognizes him, and he says, O Chavrusa, O Misusa, and he wishes that he's dead because he doesn't have any friends. So that's what the Rambam's referring to here. Sorry, I blanked on his name for a second. Rabbi Lau actually has a piece on him in this section, but we're not going to do him because chronologically he comes a lot later on. V'im lo matzu, continuing in the Rambam, tzarech l'shtat elbo, and if you can't find any friends, you got to really try hard. V'afilu yim shecheu l'chevros techila ad shiuchaber lo yasser amlechus afer ritzono ad shiuchazet chavrusa k'mo shomro ad shei muster kasher tischaber al tischaber l'fi midosecha el hiskaber l'fi midoschaber. And it makes an important point, I think it's important for us to learn about acquiring friends. If we're having difficulty acquiring friends or making friends or keeping friends, is that friends aren't about us, friends are about friends. Right? So if we want friends because we want it for ourselves, it's not going to work. If we want friends because we want to help friends, then it's going to work even better. So the friendship should be established. Do not establish friendship according to your nature. Establish friendship according to your friend's nature. When continuing in the English, the last four lines, when each of the friends conducts himself according to this directive, the desire of each one will be to fulfill the will of his colleague. Thus, they will share a single goal. How appropriate is the statement of Aristotle? Your other friend is really yourself. So the idea here is that friends should be, we should be in it for the friend, not in it for us. And if you flip back to your outline, we're in that second section, Uknei Lecha Chaver, quoted Rashi, quoted the Rambam, the Lev Simcha, which we're on two, Roman numeral two, the Lev Simcha is a Ger Rebbe, says, L'olam Yehei Rach Kekana. There's another Gemara that says that we should be as gentle as a reed. And he takes this, and the context of the Gemara there is that we should really bend over to the wishes of our friends. Doesn't mean you have to be a pushover at all points in time, but if you want to be a good friend, we have to give over to the desires of our friends. So he says that the word kene here is actually not kene, but kane, which is the reed. So kene l'cha chaver is that if you want friends, we have to bend. Right? If we stay straight and we stay strong and every one of our desires and every one of our wishes, what we need, and we don't bend to our friends, then we're not going to end up having friends. That's the message of the Rambam. It's the message of the Lev Simcha. I want to add a third possible interpretation here. I didn't see anybody actually say it, but the word kene means to acquire. Sounds like there's some sort of transaction here. Maybe you're paying, right? So we know you shouldn't really buy friends. Is that really a thing? So I would say maybe perhaps we should. So I've quoted at Charles Schuttis before, and Itai's not here, but Itai Lav, one of our board members, he every Friday brings rugelach from Schreiber's Bakery to his office. And it's such a simple thing. And I try to do it also. Whenever I go to work, somebody just came to me last week and said, and it's remembering that I happened to every single class that I was in, this is an exaggeration, but this is how she remembered it, every single class I used to bring food. So if I would go shopping, I used to come back with how much does it cost to buy a box of a Munchkins or something and pass it out to the class. And all of a sudden, instead of the class being a boring class, everybody gets Munchkins and it creates camaraderie. So I think that Uknei Lecha Chaver could be taken literally here. That we should, if we have the money, spend how much does it cost to buy a box of rugelach, to buy some Hershey's Kisses, and send them out to our friends on whenever we're going out. So spending what? Yeah, I mean, locks and learns, obviously. We know.
Yeah.
we are all good friends of Jake and Karen because of this. But I think that it could perhaps be taken literally as well. We should be spending our money not over and above what we need to, but just little things here and there. It's not a bad idea. It is a way to create some level of friendship and camaraderie between people. And finally, this is what we're going to focus on for the most part, is this third part of this statement in terms of judging people favorably. This is going to take some time, but I think this is really, really, really important. And if not, this is one of my most important messages that I think that we need to work on ourselves with and teach people about. And this is really a huge message in terms of living with other people, because if we judge people unfavorably, we will not be able to have aselecha ravs. This is what the Sforno points out, is all a continuation. Right? We're not going to be able to have role models if every time we see our role model do something that we could perhaps interpret as something we don't like, we sort of throw it under, you know, say like, oh, I can't learn from that guy. Now, I'm not saying there aren't bad people who do bad things. Let's be clear about that. But most of us, most of the time, when we judge other people, is usually not that much on the line, and we tend to throw people under the bus just with little tiny small things. So we can't be aseh lecha rav, and we can't be kneh lecha chaver if we are not dan es kol adam lekaf zechus. But I do want it. We're going to spend a nice chunk of time analyzing this to the best of our ability. Before we're still on, go to source number four. So there's one question that some of the commentaries bring up, is why do we need Yoshua ben Prachi to tell us to judge people favorably? Might be an actual mitzvah involved in this. Source number four is a pasuk in Vayikra. It says, "Lo sasu avel b'mishpat, lo sisa pnei dal, lo sedar pnei gadol, b'tzedek tispura misecha." So we're on the... Everybody with me? The source sheet that has the sources? Not the outline part? So the pasuk says, "You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor favor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shall thou judge thy neighbor, but tzedek tishpot amisecha." The context of this pasuk is talking to whom? Directly? Judges. Okay, but Rashi says, source number five, but tzedek tishpot amisecha kimashma'o, a simple explanation is that judges should judge righteously. But, davar acher, hebedan es chaver chalakav sechos. He quotes our Yehoshua ben Prachya as being that we should be judging people favorably. If you, and there's a debate as to how you're supposed to understand this, does this mean that this is a biblical commandment, that we have a mitzvah d'oraisa, that we should judge people favorably, or no? Is the context really talking about judges? Judges need to be judging in righteousness and favorably, but we, it's a nice idea, but it's not really anything binding. So there's a debate about this. Is it a d'oraisa? Is it a biblical law? Is it rabbinic law? Or is it just good advice, a nice idea? Which brings us back really to the first year where we raised some of the conceptual issues of Pirkei Avos. Is Pirkei Avos binding? Is this law? Or is this just good advice, good suggestion? This is one of those examples where it's even more muddy in terms of the conclusion here. Because we're not sure, is this just good advice, or is this something that I have to really, really, really work hard on doing, because there may be a biblical law involved here of B'tzedek Tishbot Amisecha. So flip back to the outline. So we just saw source 4, we're in the number 3, Danes Kol Adam, we just mentioned the Sforno, and source number 4, and source number 5 was Rashi, D'oraisa, D'rabbanan, a nice idea. We're now up to 3, Roman numeral 3. So the Rambam and Bartanura, when understanding this, judging people favorably, understand it in this way, that they say that here, it doesn't mean you have to judge every single person at all points in time favorably. They distinguish between two different contexts. Number one is, do you know the person or not? So if you don't know the person, and you see them doing something that you can either judge favorably or unfavorably, you don't know, you're not sure. So in that case, then you should judge favorably. But let's say you know the person. So the Rambam, and a lot of commentators follow him, distinguish between three different types of people. Between people who you consider righteous, between people you consider wicked, and then Rasha, and then people who you just consider middle of the road, Beinonis. And when it comes to righteous people, we should err on the side of, at almost all points in time, even if our radar is saying they're doing something wrong, we should really, really, really think that they're not doing something wrong. Now, with caveats, and obviously that's not an excuse to say
they're not doing anything wrong, let's cover it up and pretend nothing happened. I don't think that's the message. But our radar should, at the most part, if we generally think that they're righteous people, err on the side of favorable. If they're wicked, and this we're going to see is a debate, but if they're Rishayim, the Rambam says that we don't necessarily have this mandate to judge them favorably. So if we know in general that they are people who make bad decisions, and they make unlawfully religious decisions, and then we see them doing something that can be interpreted as either bad or possibly good, given the benefit of the doubt, not given the benefit of the doubt, Rambam says you don't have to give them the benefit of the doubt, and you could assume that what they're doing is incorrect. And we're going to see not everybody agrees with this, but to be honest with you, the mainstream opinion is like that. Rambam's a pretty big gun. The Bar Tanura says like that. Rabbeinu Yonah says like that. Most big commentators learn the Mishnah like that. Finally, most cases is Beinoni. So sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, and that's probably most of us. The Rambam, in another context, when it comes to Hilchos Tshuva, says we should all treat ourselves as if we're Beinoni. And the truth is, the Rambam there says that if you're a Rasha, you'd be dead. So from the fact that we are alive shows that we're at the very least a Beinoni. And in that case, I would argue that we should look at other people as Beinoni, which, if that's the case, and everybody's sort of middle of the road, that brings us to the point of they do something ambiguous, we have the mandate to try to judge them favorably. Now, yeah, I do want to just hold off questions, because we're gonna get to a lot of stuff. Please write it down on the side. I do want to take the questions, but we got a lot to do, and we're probably going to cover a lot of what we're thinking, because this is a continuation. So just let's write it down, and we'll get back to it. So before we jump into some of the details on that, let's just see the counterpoint, source number 6 and number 7. So flip the page back. More on the, I told you, the Rambam, the Bar Tanura, the Rabbeinu Yonah, all seem to say if they're wicked, you don't have to judge them favorably. But on a more Hasidic level, most of the Hasidic rabbis disagree with this. And starting with source number 6, Rav Nachman ben Breslov, quoted in the Sages, Barry, I assume it's in your text there too, he says that, know that every person must be judged favorably, even if he is totally evil, one must search and find that bit of goodness. And then he continues for a while. I just gave you a little bit of an excerpt. You see in the Sfas MS, source number 7, and there's two parts to that, two mini paragraphs. We're going to get back to mini paragraph 1. Mini paragraph 2 in source number 7, he quotes the Bar Tanura, who said that Ba'adam Shehuchzak Barasha, if somebody is wicked, Mutter Laduna Lachova, as we mentioned before, according to the Bar Tanura, Rambam, etc., if they're wicked, you do not have to judge them favorably. The Sfas Emes says, Ve'eno Mukhrach, I don't think that that's correct. It's not inherent within the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya. V'yesh Lomar, Af Barasha, the Sfas Emes says, even with the Rasha, even with a wicked person, we have a mandate to judge them favorably. He says that otherwise, and I think what he's saying is that it gets back to the fact that there's an isser of Betzedek Tishpat Amisacha. If they're nice people, if they're generally Beinonim, good people, then we have a pasuk that says you have to judge them favorably. So why do I need Yeshua ben Prachya to come and say judge them favorably? I think what the Sfas Emes is saying is that he's adding another level here, is that even if they are wicked, we have the responsibility to judge them favorably. So we have to understand this a little bit better. Flip back to the outline. We are now up to number 4. And for number 4, I'm going to bring in a decent chunk of psychology, and that's your other handout. Okay, so this is a photocopy from this book by Aronson, Wilson, and Ackert. It's a social psychology textbook. And I thought this was just the simplest and easiest way to give over some of the social psychology that's completely relevant and overlaps with this whole discussion. I think it'll deepen our understanding and help us with this in practical terms, in terms of how our brain works when it comes to social cognition, when it comes to how we think about other people, and then how we can hopefully fix it based on this knowledge. So you have here, one is on one side says chapter 3, page 71, and the other side says chapter 4, page 102. So this is the summary at the end of the chapter, which everybody remembers from school. You don't actually have to read the textbook, you just have to look at the summary at the end of the chapter. So this is exactly what we're going to do. Let's start with
Page 71. Social cognition. So what, by it said, where it says summary, what are the two major types of social cognition? The social thinker, people, you're on the other page.
Other sheet.
People are extremely good at social cognition, which refers to the ways in which people think about themselves and the social world. Although no computer can match us in this kind of thinking, we not are perfect. What? Okay, so let's write to for the ninth edition. Let's find the we'll send to the editors. Okay, we not are perfect social thinkers, nor are we perfect writers. Social psychologists. Actually, what's interesting is that in this other book that I have here that I want to introduce you to, it's called the Reacha Kamocha. I think it's a 9 or 10 volume set. More books keep coming out over and over and over again. It's all about mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro, and he has one volume here. Which is two great topics. One on half of the volumes on mitzvah adun l'kaf zchus. So he goes through 150, 200 pages on this topic, and then he talks about the isser of sheker, of lying, which perhaps we'll get to in later mishnayos. So he actually says one of his examples. He likes to give case studies or case examples. Who is it?
That's a good question. No, I didn't mention it. His name is David Ariyav. By David Ariyav from Eretz Yisrael, I assume. It's called the Reacha Kamoch. It's only in Hebrew. I do not think they have English. So one of the examples he gives, which is ironic, is when you're reading a book and you find a grammatical mistake in the book, how are you supposed to then judge the people who wrote the book?
And he goes through different levels. Like, do you say that they don't know what they're talking about? Do you just disregard the entire book? Oh, this is ridiculous. This guy's stupid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And Rabbi Ariyav makes the argument. Well, he says it's a typo. Not a big deal. Don't discount the rest of the book. It is what it is. It's okay. We're not perfect. Okay. Any books on a car stove? I don't think he has one. No. Okay. He did it on purpose. Oh, so I've actually seen in another psychology textbook where they've done typos on purpose to try to get you to realize, to try to get you to see. Okay, it could be. We'll have to write to the editors. Okay, back to the topic at hand. Social psychologists have uncovered some fascinating mistakes to which we are prone. Despite our uncanny cognitive abilities, social thinking can be automatic or controlled. So we all go about the world trying to figure out, right? We don't know what, I don't know what you're thinking, right? So all you are staring at me, I don't know what's going through your mind, right? I can take a guess based on maybe some of your facial expressions, maybe something you tell me later, but maybe you're not telling the truth then. I don't know, so I'm basically guessing what you're thinking at all points in time. So how am I doing that? So sometimes we do it well, sometimes we do it poorly. And as I think I mentioned in the second shiur, there's different ways our brains work. There's the automatic autopilot system one type of thinking, as Daniel Kahneman calls it, and then there's the deeper thinking system two, higher effort thinking, that goes a little bit slower and is more rational, or at least tries to be more rational. So in terms of the automatic pilot, this is the next section here. On automatic pilot, low effort thinking, a great deal of social cognition, how people think about themselves in the social world, involves automatic thinking, which is non-conscious, unintentional, involuntary, and effortless. We're not really thinking so much. It's all our brains working without us really thinking so hard about it. So number one bullet point here, people as everyday theorists, automatic thinking with schemas. An important part of automatic thinking, and I know I'm going through this quickly, and you guys, at least most of us, are not skilled in social psychology, but you have the handout to read it slower on your own if it gets a little bit overwhelming. Automatic thinking with schemas, an important part of automatic thinking is using our past knowledge to organize and interpret new information. More specifically, and I'll elaborate on this in a second, people use schemas, mental structures for organizing their knowledge about the social world around them, around themes or subjects, and for influencing what they notice, think about, and remember. Schemas are extremely useful tools for reducing ambiguity about the social world. They can cause problems, however, such as self-fulfilling prophecies, which we'll get to in a second. The idea here about schemas is we're not going into every interaction that we have with no background, with no knowledge, with no assumptions. Everything we're doing is predicated on previous examples, previous things we've encountered. And now I go into a social situation and I'm bringing all of my background into that interaction. And what it can lead to is, in terms of what they mention here, self-fulfilling prophecies, is if I think, based on my gut reaction of how I meet you, and I think like, oh, you know, I don't really like that person. Now, for all I know, it's a schema based on somebody that I had in high school who made fun of me, and you remind me of them, so now I don't like you. And now the self-fulfilling prophecy is that I'm going to look at you, and my interaction with you is going to be biased as well. So I'm going to be looking at you in a cold way, and then you're going to be cold to me, and what does my brain do? I knew it. Right? I knew exactly who you were. But the truth is, it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. That person might be nice, but because you were cold to them, because you thought they were going to be cold, then it just becomes this circle of self-fulfilling prophecy. So this is one example, one way of where our brain just, based on schemas, we're not thinking about this, based on our previous assumptions, we're just jumping into the social world around us. Skip the next bullet point, go to the third one. Mental strategies and shortcuts. Something called heuristics. So another form of automatic thinking is the use of judgmental heuristics, which are mental shortcuts people use to make judgments quickly and efficiently. So I can't think every single decision that I make in the world using a cost-benefit analysis and an Excel spreadsheet and say, you know, like, should I be friends with this person? Should I not be friends with this person? Should I approach this person? Should I not approach this person? Should I talk to this person? Should I not? I can't every single time I meet somebody think this through. Complete snap decisions. These are split-second decisions my brain makes, and it generally does a good job of doing it, but we're prone to making mistakes. One of those mistakes is called the availability heuristic. Continuing in that paragraph, examples are the availability heuristic, whereby people base a judgment on the ease with which they can bring something to mind. So when I'm judging you, I'm not being clear, I'm not being rational and thought out about this judgment always. So the one example I saw when I was looking for different examples online is, if I'm a boss and I have two employees who come to me and they're both been late. One's been late 9 times, one's been late 3 times. But the one who's been late 3 times was late last week 3 times. Right, so if I'm making a decision about like who am I going to reprimand, who am I going to talk to, the availability heuristic, if I don't think it through, is going to say, who's coming late? Who's the guy who's coming late more? The 3, because it happened more recently. Right? Because, again, the nine could have happened a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. So if I think about it logically and I take out my Excel spreadsheet, I'm going to know that person one was late 9 times. But if I just think about it quickly and say, oh my gosh, who's coming late? This person's been late the last 3 weeks. They're coming late so much. It's not really factually accurate that they are more late than the other person, but the availability heuristic takes the information that's easily accessible to me at any point in time, and that's what helps me make my decisions. Think about this. Apply this to your life. You get into a fight with somebody, a spouse, a kid, whatever it is, a parent, and what are the things that I'm going to be bringing into this argument? The things that happened most recently, or that I can recall more easily. And usually, the way our brain works is that when we try to recall things, what are the things that pop into our head? It's not like, oh, that time that you cooked me dinner and it was so delicious and amazing. But our negative thinking tends to be more fluid and come to our head even quicker. So through heuristics, through these snap judgments, through these quick thinking, we are prone to judging people unfavorably. Next bullet point. So skipping the next heuristic, but next bullet point for the sake of time, power of unconscious thinking. Recent research suggests that a great deal of human thoughts occur outside conscious awareness. People unconsciously monitor what is going on around them in case something important occurs that requires their conscious attention. Even people's goals can be unconsciously activated. There's so much going on in our brain that we're not aware of. Right, so the example that I give when I teach this in college, even though it's not relevant to judging per se, but our brain is working on so many things right now. We have something in our brain that monitors temperature, for instance. Right. So in the background, even though we're not consciously thinking about it, our brain is always thinking, what's the temperature right now? If it's a nice temperature, then we're not going to be consciously aware of it. But if it's freezing, you know, then all of a sudden, it's going to go to our conscious part of our brain and say, you know, Rabbi Shipman, can you make the air conditioner higher? Which I tried, but it's still pretty cold. But I like it cold better than hot, but I'm biased. But so that's something that's going on unconsciously in our brain that we're not aware of. And that happens. This affects our social cognition as well. Things are going on in the background of our brain that we're not aware of that are influencing our decision making as to whether I should judge that person favorably, not judge that person favorably. Finally, in the last bottom right section here is in terms of the higher effort thinking, is that sometimes we need to slow down and think things more logically, think things more through. And I think that the message of Danis Chaver Chalachav Sukkos is that we need to be aware of all of our automatic biases, of all of our fast, quick social cognitions, and that we make them. Be aware that your brain makes them. Be aware that a bunch of times it's okay and it's good that your brain makes them, because again, we can't live life making these all these cost-benefit analyses every single second of the day. But when it comes to whether or not you are going to judge somebody favorably or unfavorably, the Torah is telling you, slow down and move from unconscious, automatic, autopilot thinking, and now you got to be deliberate, right? Like we said in the second Mishnah, first Mishnah, I believe, right? We should be deliberate in judgment. Same thing over here. We need to be deliberate. One of the things Rabbi Ariyav does is he goes through all of the things that you want to be a judge. You want to judge your friends. Well, guess what? You got to follow all the rules that judges have to follow when they make decisions. And that means you got to think things through. You got to know all the sides of the arguments, and you got to be really deliberate in your final conclusion. Our brains don't work like that unless we work on them. So that, I think that's a huge message out of this. Flip the page, a few more concepts before we go back to the sources. It's really hard to understand Dan Eschavercha Lekavskos without knowing a little bit about attribution theory. So how do we determine why people do what they do? Again, our minds are doing... I don't know what's going on in your brain when you do something. So I have to... My brain is trying to figure that out. So how do we figure it out? One's called attribution theory. Causal attribution, answering the why question. According to attribution theory, we try to determine why people do what they do in order to uncover the feelings and traits that are behind their actions. We try to explain where they're coming from. This helps us understand and predict our social world. It's not necessarily a bad thing. But where we get into trouble is based on what we generally tend to conclude on attribution theory. We have two options, right? So there's something called, in the next bullet point, internal and external attributions. The nature of attributional process, when trying to decide what causes people's behavior, we can make one of two attributions, an internal or dispositional attribution, or an external situational attribution. So I see you doing something wrong. I can say, wow, you're a really bad person. You're just, right, that person who just cut me off when I'm driving, like, they're real jerks. Like, completely, totally, just complete jerks. Right? Not, that would be a dispositional attribution. A situational attribution is, wow, they're in a rush. Wow, they weren't paying attention so much. Wow, they're, whatever. So, they're running to the hospital. Whatever it is, I can put a situation, and even if they did something wrong, it's still not necessarily their character. It's just what they did at this point in time. So the problem is that our brain generally tends to go in which direction? It usually goes into internal dispositional, right? So that's called the skip a bullet point to the next bullet point, the fundamental attribution error. People as personality psychologists. In making attributions, people also use various mental shortcuts, including schemas and theories. We talked about that before. One common shortcut is the fundamental attribution error, the tendency to believe that people's behavior corresponds to their disposition. That's what we tend to do. When other people do something bad, we assume it's because they're bad people. It's dispositional. It's something inside. It's characterological. So now, that's a word. Next, skip the next... the next bullet point, and go to self-serving attributions, and this is the contrast. So when it comes to other people, what do? We assume it's dispositional. When it comes to ourselves, when we do something wrong, now all the excuses start to come out, all the rationalizations. This is called the self-serving attributions. People's attributions are also influenced by their personal needs. Self-serving attributions occur when people make internal attributions for their successes and external attributions for their failures. So why did I do well? Because I'm an awesome person, right? That's just who I am. I'm really smart, and I'm a genius. Why did I do something bad? I was tired. right? It was the teacher's fault. It was a hard test. You know, they didn't really prepare me for it, etc. And then skip a few lines to the end of that section. The bias blind spot in the same paragraph indicates that we think other people are more susceptible to attributional biases than they're thinking that we are. So now, I just told that to you, that when it comes to other people, we assume it's their character, but for us, it's just a situation. But now you, most of our brains, when I tell you that, are saying like, no, other people say that they do that. Other people think that that when other people do things bad, it's because of their disposition. But not me. I'm better than that. I know it's the environment when other people do bad. But that's also just our brain tricking ourselves. Because the tendency of our brain is to think that other people do things bad because of their character. We do things bad because of the environment. Which brings me, just for a second, to something that, skipping a few sources, something that the, who is it? Where is it? It's not the Sfas MS. The Kedushas HaLevi. The Kedushas HaLevi says that this is the exact point here, is that when it comes to other people, the Mishnah is telling us, is you need to give them, he doesn't say it in these words, but you have to give them, judge them favorably, assume the situational situational explanation. But when it comes to us, because our brain has a self-serving bias, we basically need to override that and judge ourselves unfavorably. Now that's a dangerous concept, could be a dangerous concept, but in general, the idea that we should be more strict with ourselves, I think the point here is a big message, a broader message, is that the Torah is telling us, listen, your brain works a certain way. My message to you is override those tendencies. If those tendencies are going to create strife and sinas chinam and disharmony within the community, and override those tendencies if it's going to create gaiva, arrogance, and non-improvement in you because you think you're great and awesome. No. Judge yourself to improve. Judge other people's favorably. Basically, switch the natural tendencies of your brain in order to live in social harmony and self-striving of self-improvement. So now, go back to your outline. On this sheet, outlines. We just did number 4. It was the social cognition handout. And now I want to sum up everything in number 5. So I think that if we want to judge somebody, as I'll get to at the end, I don't think we should. But if we do and we feel like we need to, here's the steps that I outlined that we should be thinking to ourselves. So 5.1. Is this relevant to you? You see somebody doing something that's questionable. Is this relevant to you? If the answer is no, stop the discussion. Turn your brain off. This is irrelevant. Don't worry about it. It's better for you. You don't need to use your mind, your headspace, to deal with other people's actions. If it's not relevant to you, end the discussion. If you think that there's something either relevant to you or that you can help this person, you see them doing something bad, there's a mitzvah tochacha, or maybe you can help them improve themselves. So if it is relevant, now, number 2. Did you see the whole picture in the current moment? Our perception of reality is usually not 100% accurate. And there's a book, The Other Side of the Story, likes to bring in examples of this. The famous cookie example, right? The person's at the airport, and the person sitting next to them is eating all her cookies, and she's like thinking to herself, I can't believe, how is this person eating my cookies? She's literally sitting next to her, taking her cookies and eating them. And he's eating one, she's eating one, he's eating one. She's going nuts in her mind. And finally gets to the last cookie, and the guy sitting next to her says, you know what, you can have it. And she's like, she's going, what's wrong with this guy? And she gets on the plane, she opens up her bag, she goes, her box of cookies was there, and she was eating the other guy's box of cookies, right? So our perception of reality is flawed. We fill in gaps. Our brains fill in gaps at all points in time. Our sensations, our perceptions, our hearing, everything is flawed. And our memory is even worse. And so anytime I go over the chapter of memory in my college class, basically the message of the chapter is your memory stinks, right? Whatever we think our memory is good, it's really not. We have so many mistakes that our memory makes. And the message that I give to the kids in college is a message of humility. Right? You think you know what happened. You think you know the argument. You think you know what she said and he said, and I remember exactly. No, no. Like, take a step back.
Our memory's not so great. Our perception of the situation's not great. So just tone it down a little bit. Don't be so confident in everything that you think or believe or see or feel, because sometimes we're just wrong. So step two is make sure you know all the details. And my guess is half the time is that we're going to be knocked off at this stage as well, because we're not going to be able to know all the details. Step three, if you saw the whole picture in the current moment, so you know all the details, did you see the backstory, right? Are you sure you have all the facts from the background? So you saw this person retaliating, but do you know what that person did beforehand? This happens with kids all the time. You see one kid, you know, hitting the other kid, and you yell at that kid, but you don't realize that the kid, right, 5 seconds before, you know, just, you know, pinched them. So did you see the whole story? Do you have the background story of what happened in the moments preceding this, what happened? Do you know all the halachos, right? So you're judging them in terms of they did an avera. Do you know all the halachos? Do you know maybe there's an opinion that says that they're allowed to do it? Right? So you have to know all the details, all the background. Now, let's say you know, number four, if you're sure you have all the facts, and you know they did something wrong, do you know their intentions? Did they do it on purpose? And what you'll see in the sources is that we should assume they did it, if you know that, again, we're assuming you know they did something wrong, assume they did it by accident. Assume maybe they were forced into it. They didn't have a choice. They were onus. Situational, not dispositional. So now, let's say you had all the facts. You knew their intentions. You knew that in this action they were wrong. That brings us to the next step. So everything until now we're talking about actions, judging actions. Now we get in terms of judging people as a whole. So flip back. We're going to come back to this in a second. Flip back to the source. Source number 7, the Sfas Emes that we saw before. Part 1. It's a famous Sfas Emes. The rabbi likes to quote it from Rabbi Plushkin. As kol ha'adam, Havalel Memar Kol Adam. Why does it say judge? That's Kol Ha'adam, the whole person. It should have said judge every person. What is the whole person? So Venira de Haperish Devadai Hagam de Bidavar Prati Eno Osetov. Maybe you know for sure that this person did something wrong in the moment. Mikomakom as Kol Ha'adam Bechlal, their entirety of the person. Yesh Bo Dvar Mu Midos Acherim. They have other good qualities. Shel Sklus. Don't, even if you know this action, don't make global evaluations of people because they did one, two, three, or four things wrong. There's a big person here. They have good qualities, they have bad qualities. Like most of us, we're bane on it. So just because they do something wrong, you can't make a fundamental attribution error. You can't say dispositionally these people are bad, evil, etc. Now flip back to the outline. Where I quote to you the Noam Elimelech. Oh, I said this was late before. It's a Noam Elimelech in terms of the self-serving bias. And then B, so 5B is another part of this, is let's say you know they did it wrong, you know the action, and you're going to be careful. And I think this helps us understand why we shouldn't judge people as a total also, is that you don't know their background. You don't know their upbringing. You don't know their, you know, their biology, their neurochemistry. So for you, it's easy to say, if I was put in that situation, I wouldn't have made that bad decision that they made. But they have a different battle than you. Their brain works differently than you. Their parents treated them differently than your parents treated you. Yeah, they had a different social environment when they were a kid. So I think at that point, you have the other mission in Perkei Avos, which we'll get to later on, is Al Tadin Es Chaver Chad Shetegi Elim Komo. Can't judge your friend until you're in their place. And guess what? You're never going to be in their place. Conclusion? Don't judge. At least globally. Okay, you want to talk about actions? We'll talk about actions. We'll get to a second in terms of judging actions. In terms of globally, the answer is, at least in my understanding, and I have some background, some sources, maybe not everybody will say it, but in the Hasidic sources it seems clear, is just don't judge. Don't judge a person as a total whole. There's some nuance here, and maybe everybody's bothered by what about a completely wicked person? I got Rav Nachman Breslov and the Sfas Emes saying, even a wicked person, how far does that go? How evil? Okay, maybe you want to talk about, you know, Hitler Yimach Shemo. Okay, we'll put him on the extreme. But for your neighbor who didn't take out their garbage last week, you know, Russia, Marusha, completely evil person, I think for most things that we are interacting on a daily level, I think it's, in my opinion, it's generally a good idea to just delete the judging. Delete as a whole. And we'll get to actions in a second. I know we're running out of time. So, fine. Now, six. This is to back it up a little bit. You're allowed to judge actions for sure, especially, as we said, if it's relevant to you. So six, and we'll do this quickly. One, two, three, four, five. Downsides that you should be aware of. If you're going to go with not judging or judging favorably, there are situations where we need to be careful. Number one, first and foremost, is that if there's a danger at some level to yourself, you don't have to just be blind to that. There are people out there who can hurt you. There are people out there who want to hurt you, let's say. Maybe not. Maybe we overestimate that as well. But there are. But we have to be aware of that. We have to be cautious. In being cautious, we should be aware of all of the biases and shortcuts that we take. But you can still be cautious. But with a little humility. I don't know for sure if this person is going to do something, but I'm still going to, you know, cross the street. You know? But I'm not going to judge them completely unfavorably and say, I know they're evil people who are going to beat me up if I stay on this side of the street. No, I don't know. But I'm going to be cautious, so I'm going to go to the other side of the street. I think that's a fair thing to say. But so you got to take care of yourself. You need to take care of yourself. You can't just let people walk over or push you over or damage you just because you want to judge them favorably. Rabbi Aryeh talks about Gedaliah ben Achikam, who, you know, for those in Tanakh, we'll talk about a different time, who basically said, nobody's going to hurt me, nobody's going to hurt me, nobody's going to hurt me, and he got killed. Okay? Number two, by judging one person favorably, are you judging another person unfavorably? Okay, another typo. So there's cost-benefits here. You got to know both sides of the story. Will excusing them cause you to excuse yourself? Right, so if I can rationalize and justify and judge you favorably, now all of a sudden that action that you did wrong to me is not wrong. Right? So you have some cognitive dissonance there. And you have to be careful of that because we're not excusing the action. We're just judging the person favorably. That's not an excuse for you then to do something that's wrong. Number four, difficulties communicating nuance to children. I think it's really important. Right? So if I think that there are a bunch of people who I interact with on a daily basis who are doing something that I don't want my children to be doing, but I can judge them favorably, and I'm not going to insert examples here, I'll leave it to your own imagination, but people who overall I'm judging as nice, good people, but maybe they don't follow X or Y, Z halacha as to the extent that I want my children to follow. So how do you explain that to a child? Right? No, it's okay for them, it's not okay for us. It's hard. It's difficult. It needs some thinking and it needs to be thought out well. And number five is how far does it go? What if somebody's considered pure? Is there a pure evil? Can that be justified? Is Russia, no matter what they do, I should judge them favorably? So again, with extreme examples that maybe feel uncomfortable, let's put those to the side. So I think 99.9 of our interactions are not those examples. Most people we're interacting with on a daily basis, wherever we are not completely wicked people. And finally, we're going to conclude with this idea. If you flip back to the last source of Tzadok HaKohen, so it's a little bit involved, but I think, and I'm not positive, I know exactly what he's saying in total detail, but the gist of what I think he's saying is that he goes through Rav Yishuv ben Prachya, and next week we'll speak about, there's a Gemara that talks about Rav Yishuv ben Prachya was actually the Rebbe of Jesus. Okay, so that's going to be a whole, whether or not that's historically accurate or not is a little bit confusing, but there's some Gemaras that were originally deleted and then reinserted because of all, whatever. So there's a lot of controversy that we're going to get to next week, which is going to be fascinating. So he mentions that a little bit. And again, in context, Aselecha Rav, Uknelecha Chaver, Vevedanes Kol Adam Kav Schus, putting all of that together with what happened in that story, we'll have to deal with. So he quotes that, and he says, "Lefichach," the second line, "Amar b'lashon zeh lamar she'ein lachush l'kach." Don't worry about judging people. That's how they done. Komas of stum. Just don't judge people. And then he ends off with this line: "V'hade kifshe derachman alamali." With these secrets or these involvements, this job of God, why am I getting involved? And I think what he's saying, at least the way I want to interpret what he's saying, is that, remember, I don't know what you're thinking. Who knows what you're thinking? Who knows what your attention is? God. Let God judge you for that. Right? It's not my job to guess and to think what you're thinking, what you're doing, what your actions are. Now, again, with the aside that there is a mitzvah of tochacha, and when it comes to actions, if you know they're doing something wrong, go through the list of five things that I went through here, and then you could possibly approach the person and say something in a nice, assertive way. I know, you know, I don't think this is appropriate. I don't think you should be doing it. Whatever the context is, has to be done deliberately and thought out through with the guidance of somebody else, perhaps, a seilach harav, k'neilach hachaver, talk it out with somebody first. But at the end of the day, why am I getting so involved in Hadei Kivsha D'Rachmana? Why am I getting so involved in your thought process? That's God's purview. That's not my purview. And then finally, the last source, I think, and it's Aramaic, I think it's like the job, the business, and it's probably a direct literal translation that's better than that. And then finally, the last thing in the outline 7.2 is there's another mission in Perkei Avos, which we'll get to in a few decades from now, Avos 4.4, where it says, Al tehi dan yachidi, you should not judge on your own as an individual. Again, the message here is perhaps talking to a judge, but at least for our purposes, I think the message can be extrapolated to us. So you should not judge on your own. What are basically we talking about here when we're talking about social judgments? Judging on our own. And then it finishes off, she'ein dan yachidi ala achad. There's one person who judges, one being who judges on his own, that's God. This is not our job. We shouldn't be judging people with the caveats, etc. But as a whole, in most of our interactions, let's try to delete that judging as much as possible. Actions that we don't like, let's be nuanced about it. Let's think it through. And then even if we do conclude that they're doing something wrong and we know all the facts, let's make sure that we're not judging dispositionally, that we're taking a bigger, broader perspective, and we're not judging as kol ha'adam. Maybe that one thing they did wrong, but they have other good qualities. No global attributions. Global attributions get you into trouble. And with that, I think you create the social harmony that the Torah wants us to have. Have a Rebbe to teach you some stuff. Have a friend who you can hang out with and learn from. And then, in order for that to happen, you got to make sure that we turn off this quick, automatic process, this fundamental attribution error, etc., that we can then have these live in social harmony with avas chinam instead of sinas chinam. We're going to stop here. I do want to take a few questions, although I am going to have to run out in a few minutes because my daughter's doing a poem recital, which I'm not invited to, but I have to be home so my wife can go. We're going to take one question, then we're going to bench. Yeah.
I'm thinking as you were talking, but you may have partly answered it. Hocheach tochiach is some
December. That's it comes in at the end. Right.
The Rav who has to be reprimanded and help people the right way.
And the Rav has to go through all of those steps first.
I thought about it many times and said,
"Mokom is Hashem. Al tagiyah es haver. Atzis a gevum komo." Yeah, I hear that. That fits in nicely. Okay. All right. We're gonna.